Hi, today is March 29th. I don't know why I wrote 2021 over here. Oh, I know, because this is from last week's notes that we didn't do. Today's March 29th, 2020. This is Movie Views Podcast 322. I'm Todd Ogasawart, my good friend John Westfall. And we got a whole bunch of stuff to talk about. I guess we'll start it with that I am in kind of a lockdown. I actually have to go into work, but I know that some people have been stopped by, you know, police on their way to work, and they said, hey, where are you going? And, you know, they show them their badge or, you know, whatever it is that shows them where they work, and, you know, basically they're let go. I know a bunch of people, though, were actually cited for, you know, most of the people were basically belligerent. You know, they were told not to go in a certain place. State parks, for example, are closed, as in yellow tape closed. You know, do not enter kind of stuff. And, you know, they probably went in and told to leave and didn't go. I think there are two people arrested. So, yeah, most of Hawaii is in a lockdown. I say most because we have four counties. And of the four counties, I think two counties, including one I live in, are in lockdown. Which means you can go, you know, to work if you're considered essential. You can go shopping for food and other essentials, medication, that sort of thing. But otherwise, you're supposed to stay at home. So, and I have seen stuff like police cruisers at parks, you know, kind of the park entryways, make sure people don't congregate in parks, things like that. So that's what we are.
A little bit, thankfully, a little different here because in Mississippi, in rural Mississippi, we haven't had the same level of outbreak. But we are still, you know, I've been working from home and my wife's been working from home. So it's definitely, when I've seen the tech news and tech seems to be moving right along with updates and new products and things like that, that makes me feel a little bit more normal.
Sometimes surprisingly, stuff we're going to talk about today.
Well, and the quote I had last week to a friend was, this is extreme dysfunction coupled with mundane normalcy.
Yeah, there you go. Which is because weird,
a lot of the things I do as a professor, I sometimes try to work from home. You know, if I can get a couple of days in a week where I don't have to go in the office, I'll work from home regularly just because I can be more productive. So in a lot of ways, if I don't look at the news, which I try not to do as much as other people, it is very much more mundane normalcy.
Hmm. Yeah, and speaking of maybe mundane non-normalcy, so there are a couple. I happened to come across it this morning while I was prepping for the podcast, some really unexpected developments from this COVID-19 social distancing and social isolation and all that stuff. So the first thing I read was, CNBC is reporting that some drive-in movie theaters are making a comeback because, you know, you got built-in social distancing if everybody's in their own car. I don't know what you do with food because, you know, movie theaters make their money from the concession stands, not from a movie ticket. So I'm not sure how that works. But we don't have any drive-in theaters here anymore. So,
you know, and most of the drive-in theaters that I have seen, you know, I haven't been to one in, you know, 20 years or so. Yeah. But most of the ones that I've seen now and I've heard about, they will broadcast the audio over FM or something like that. So you don't even have to pull the speaker into your car in days of old and listen to it. You really can be completely socially distant and just be in your car.
Yeah, it'd be cool if they did it over some kind of a commercial grade Wi-Fi, and then you Bluetooth it to your speakers. But anyway, that would get rid of the FM interference to nearby homes. But anyway, and the other one, so that was kind of like, oh yeah, I get that. The next story, I did not get it all. So this is Newsweek reporting. Baby chickens sold out nationwide ahead of Easter as Americans panic buy feathery friends for comfort. So, I know that you used to have some birds as pets, John. Have you gone out and bought baby chickens?
I have not, you know, but right now we are petless. Yeah. And I think it's kind of sad. We might need to get one soon just to have something around other than ourselves. Because, you know, we're actually doing pretty well in terms of stir craziness, but it is different than what we're expecting. I have an app on my phone that tracks, you know, where I'm at just for my own records. Right. And I looked at the weekly report and it was saying, you know, you've been at home a lot more lately than you usually are. It was sort of, you know, kind of, yeah, you were at home more than usual, around 119 hours compared to your average of 65 hours.
Yeah, so, there you go.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, let me go look it up. I posted it to some of our friends on Facebook last night. Let me find it. There is a company in the U.S., and I'm looking, called Unicast, U-N-A-C-A-S-T, Unicast. And they have a COVID-19 social distancing scoreboard, which I will put a link in our show notes. Mm-hmm. Uses cell phone data. I don't know how they're getting it, but, you know, I assume there's some sort of a data collector for a bunch of carriers. Anyway, so they grade not just states, but counties within states in the U.S., on social distancing using, you know, past and current data as an A/B test, and also based on distance traveled. So it's kind of interesting, you know. It's in Hawaii we have four counties, and two of them scored okay, you know, kind of a B and a C or something, but two the other two were D and F, so not so good. So yeah, lots of interesting, you know, differences even within the same state on compliance with this whole, you know, social distancing thing. All right. So the next thing was to get to your, what would you call it, mundane normalcy?
Yep.
Apple, 2 weeks ago, I guess, or thereabouts, made what I thought was a surprise set of announcements. They announced new iPad Pros models, two new iPad Pro models, and a new MacBook Air, and a new Mac Mini, which, you know, we've been talking about for ages and ages and ages, that it's been years since we saw a new Mac Mini. So they finally announced all of it. I'm not going to really talk much about the Mac Mini because I've sort of lost interest in it because I've been waiting so long. but maybe we'll start with the MacBook Air, because, you know, it's a shorter topic for me, at least. I don't know, might be more interest to John. Since I think he's looking for something, but maybe not an Air. So the MacBook Air 2020 was announced the same time as the new iPad Pros. And it starts at $999, which is, a lower base price than the earlier model. A review in The Verge said they recommend the mid-level model, the $1299 config, which has a quad-core i5, 512 gigs of SSD, which is really nice. And honestly, that's a better deal than the MacBook Pro I bought last year. Late last year, like in October, November, I bought a MacBook Pro 2019, which has a, you know, quad-core i5 and only 256 gigabytes of solid state. And they both have 8 gigs of RAM. So dollar-wise, I think it was on sale for $1,250, which is from Costco. I think I bought it from Costco. And I thought it was a good deal at the time, but kind of wish I'd waited for the iPad MacBook Air. I don't know. I really like MacBook Airs. I've bought one for myself, bought two for my daughter. So this would have been the fourth one had I bought it. But I'll stick with the MacBook Pro. And in order to rationalize my purchase, let me say the other thing. One other thing is they did change the keyboard, which is one thing I really envy. So it doesn't have that terrible butterfly keyboard on my MacBook Pro. It has the new-ish Magic Keyboard. It says the new Magic Keyboard is introduced in the 2019 MacBook Pro, but I don't think I have a Magic Keyboard because it is not good. But anyway, in order to rationalize my purchase of MacBook Pro last year, it says that the MacBook Pro can run hotter and faster for a longer period of time than MacBook Air, which means better performance for heavy sustained tasks, quoting The Verge here again. And the Retina display is commendably sharp. I'm not sure what that means. That means, I guess, it's okay, but not great. Doesn't have a P3 wide color gamut of the MacBook Pro. That's the MacBook Air. Doesn't have the wide color gamut. And they say it's weird that Apple calls it a 2560 by 1600 when it runs effectively at 1440 by 900 by default, although you can change it. So, you know, and it turns out that one of the things that really makes a MacBook run hot or Mac run hot is Skype. Skype is a processor hog. I wasn't Horg. That was a new word. like a Horcrux in Harry Potter. But it's a hog. You know, and I know on my Mac Mini, it would run really hot when I used to record. Not my Mac Mini, my MacBook Air. When I used to record podcasts on MacBook Air, it would run really hot. I mean, I would touch the left front panel next to the trackpad, and it was uncomfortably warm. Right now, we've been talking for, 15, 20 minutes, I guess, including prior to the podcast. And it's warm, but not uncomfortable to touch, you know, sort of comfortably warm. So the MacBook Pro does run reasonably cool with a really, you know, real CPU hog like Skype. So I don't know, John.
Comfortably warm instead of comfortably numb.
Yeah, there you go. So what are you going to do, John? You going to get another MacBook Pro or you going to get a MacBook Air?
I mean, you know, I have a MacBook Air at work that I bought in 2011, and it is still, it's still good enough that I can use it as my daily driver in one of my offices.
Sure.
I have my MacBook Pro here at home that I bought in 2015, and it works very well. I have very few complaints about it. Honestly, I could probably go with the MacBook Air, but I don't know. I'm trying to remember what exactly I was annoyed with when I was using my MacBook Air full-time at home, but there was some reason I did go back to the Pro. And I think at the end of the day, it was more that the portability wasn't as important to me as the processing power. So my plan right now is to still go when I upgrade to a MacBook Pro, and that would be at the next refresh of the MacBook Pro would be when I'd be planning to do that. But we will see. You know, there's always a chance that I will decide to be frugal and go with the Air. And I always know that if I do go with the Air and I really want a Pro, I could always move the Air to my office and retire the old Air. So, you know, there are pluses and minuses. But right now, I probably would still stick with the Pro. But it is nice that the Air is useful.
Yeah. You know, I have a MacBook Air. Let's see. I have a 20. Well, I inherited my daughter's old MacBook Air. It's a 2013. It's the one that she got sent off to college with. And I inherited from her when she graduated, and I got her a new one. But, you know, the other thing nice about it, by the way, is the MacBook Pro. I think it has kind of a big power draw, I think. I think it has like a 60-watt or 61-watt power draw on it. And so when I went to go find a charger for it, a USB-C charger for it, I had to get kind of a hefty one with a, you know, USB-C, what is it called, a PD port, power distribution port on it. And it runs fine. I'm using one from Anker right now that works great. It's plugged right into my MacBook Pro now, charging it up or keeping it charged while we talk. It charges pretty much everything I have, you know, Chromebooks, Windows, PCs, like my work PC I had to bring home to work from home. But the MacBook Air has a really low draw. I want to say it's like 31 watts, something like that. Yeah, a 30 watt. It's a 30 watt charger. So, you know, you can get by with pretty much anything to charge it via USB-C. So that's kind of nice, you know, versus having to look around and get the right, you know, a USB-C PD port. That's really a high wattage charger. So there you go. All right, so nobody here is going to be buying a MacBook Air soon. You know, I've got a 2019 MacBook Pro, so it's not going to be replaced for years, if ever. Who knows? You know, maybe my next MacBook Pro will be an iPad Pro, you know, in 2023 or whatever. But getting to the new stuff, then other new stuff, which is I want to spend a little bit more time on, is the iPad Pro 2020, which comes in two models, 11, 12.9 inches. I picked up the 11 and pretty happy with it so far. I was really surprised when all this stuff was announced, you know, 3 weeks ago, whatever it was now. Were you?
Yeah, like I said, it made me feel sort of like there was still some normalcy in the world, that Apple was still releasing things, and it was surprising to have the refresh. But of course, Apple, if they were planning on doing a media event, wouldn't be able to hold their media event right now.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like, well, you know, if the whole purpose of the media event is really just for kind of the media and for show, go ahead and release the products. Kind of go back to the Apple of old and be like, hey, you know, we have new stuff. You can get it today.
Yeah,
you don't have to wait until a week from now to let the hype build. We're just going to put it right out there. And I, you know, I've been a big fan of the iPad Pro 11. I've had that since the end of 2018. So I'm very interested to kind of hear your thoughts as you continue to use it and your initial thoughts, because it's the upgrade to the exact one that I have. So
yeah. And so, you know, and I'll preface by saying that your experience will be very different from mine, because your experience, if you bought a new one, is like a lot of the reviewers I've been reading, and a lot of them, quite frankly, I think are jaded. I don't think you're jaded, but they're jaded because they get new iPad Pros or new iPads in general, you know, every time a new one comes out. I haven't bought a new one since 2017, so my experience is going from a really nice iPad Pro 10.5 purchased in 2017 to this new iPad Pro 11 in 2020. So it's, you know, a 3-year jump for me. It's a much faster CPU, a whole different camera system. It supports the Apple Pencil 2, and I've never used Apple Pencil 2 until, you know, Wednesday of last week. And so for me, it's a huge, huge difference. For you, it'd probably be more like, you wouldn't be jaded necessarily, but you go, well, you know, it's okay. It's a little bit nicer. The camera's a little bit different. And that's pretty much might be all different for you. For me, it's a whole new world. For one thing, I don't have a button. I don't have a home button. And, you know, you would think that having used an iPhone XS for a couple of years now, well, year and a half, I guess, or so, that, oh, you know, you shouldn't care about having a button or not. And you know what? That learning has not generalized to the iPad. So the iPad, which is what I said, you know, when it came out in 2010, is not just a big iPhone. It's a whole different experience. And the lack of a button it does not generalize from the iPhone to the iPad. I'm still getting used to having to figure out how to turn it on without using the power button. I think you can tap it. Yeah, you can tap it and then swipe up and it turns on. That's kind of nice. Before I get on with iPad Pro, I got to mention, you know, so I'm showing it to John now. So I bought the smart, what is it called? The Smart Folio or something like that. Smart Folio for iPad Pro. It's $79. I mean, it's really expensive. And I'm not exactly sure what I was expecting. These days I tend not to buy Apple covers because I've had bad experiences with them and they're expensive. And this one, I think it's going to be similar experience. So I'm taking it off now to John to show. And so it's a, you know, it's a front and back cover.
Yep.
And I'm showing to John, it's super flat. So there's nothing to, you know, fit it into. There's no click. It's basically magnetic because the back of the iPad Pro is metal. And so it just magnetically snaps into place. But the cover, and it does hold the iPad up. I'm holding it now gingerly with my hand underneath it. But it has fallen off the iPad. The iPad has not fallen off the cover, but the cover has fallen off the iPad. You know, it's probably the way I take off the front cover and I do it out in the wrong way and the back falls off. But that's happened several times since I've gotten it. The other thing I don't like about it is that although it has a cutout for the camera in the back, when you fold the cover over to, you know, use the iPad, there's no similar cutout for the front. And you can say, well, they did that so it protect the screen when it's covered. I go, yeah, okay, fine. But, you know, there must be some way, you know, put a little, I don't know, a little, for $79, they can put maybe a little quartz glass in front of the camera that's, you know, very transparent so you can take pictures with the cover completely folded over instead of having to sort of unfold it part of the way. Because that's the other thing that's really different about this iPad Pro, and I'm showing it to John now, is it has a camera setup that's very similar to the iPhone 11 Pro, right? So it doesn't have a 2X. You know, that's the other thing it doesn't have. Instead of having a 2X optical zoom, what it does is it has a 1X and a 0.5 for ultra wide, which I find kind of interesting, and I'm not quite sure. Well, anyway. I'm tapping it out, so I get 0.5, which is ultra wide, and there's a 1X. It also doesn't seem to have any night sight, or whatever Apple calls their equivalent, to take low light photos. It doesn't have that, so it's not exactly the same as the iPhone Pro 11's camera. What it does have new though is a LiDAR, and you know those. I won't say most folks. Many of our friends know what LiDAR is, light detection and ranging. And you know, you see it on self-driving cars, and you see it on people who are doing survey work, you know, or doing 3D modeling, that sort of thing. And honestly, I was really excited about this, but I haven't actually found any apps to use it yet. I think the Apple Measure app might use it, but I really, unfortunately, I also haven't had a lot of time to play with the new iPad Pro. Because, well, the world has been so crazy for the last couple of weeks.
One of the things that you bring up with that, though, that gets me thinking is not having the 2X on the iPad. If you are doing what Apple would like you to do, mm-hmm. you have the 2S on your iPhone that's also in your pocket. Right. So I could see it being a useful combination. And I'm trying to think about where I see people using photos on the iPad.
Yeah.
And it is kind of weird because the iPad is where I would actually want the enhanced zoom versus the iPhone, because what I see a lot of people using their iPads for are taking photos of slides and meetings. You know, they'll hold up their iPad real quick, grab a shot.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier. You would probably want a 2X to zoom in on the slide across the room versus the wide angle, like, unless you really want to know how many people were in the room. whereas when I'm out and about with my iPhone, I would actually rather have the wide angle because I could get the, get a bigger panoramic shot. I guess all this just means that point-and-shoot cameras for a variety of applications are not truly dead yet,
right.
And because I can just grab that and do both. But
and if I'm simply missing this, because I'm scrolling through the various options here, and I don't think I see it. I mean, I see slow-mo, video, portrait, square, pano, but I don't see anything that... Oh, wait, what's this? Oh, depth of focus. Okay, that's interesting. That's separate from portrait mode, apparently. But at any rate, or is part of portrait mode. You now have finer grain. I don't have an 11 Pro. I should ask my daughter. She has one. If she has depth of focus adjustment in portrait mode. But it's funny because I always make fun of people who take photos with their tablet. But now it's like, gee, I kind of want to do that, but I don't have a zoom.
Yeah.
And I don't have an 11 Pro, right? So I also don't have low light and ultra wide, which I find ultra wide amazing. I've seen my daughter's ultra wide photos, and also her night photos are also equally amazing. She took a riverboat tour in Europe last year before all this craziness erupted, and her photos from that riverboat tour are just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know, John, you have any questions about this? Not that I can answer all of them, but that's pretty much my feeling about this.
Well, so what I did, so obviously one of the things that we've talked about in the past are Apple keyboards and
yep.
problems with Apple keyboards.
Yep.
I do have the Apple keyboard for my iPad 11 Pro.
Yeah.
I have replaced it at least once. It was under warranty, so they sent me a new one for free, and I sent them back the one that was falling apart. So I do agree with you that their build quality leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah.
But for me, when I got the iPad 11 Pro with the Apple Pencil 2 and the keyboard cover, it became basically what I took everywhere with me when I was working mm-hmm. and some leisure activities. So I know you carry a variety of devices with you on a regular basis when you're allowed to leave the house. So is this going to – how do you see this fitting into your daily use? Is it going to be going to work? Is it going to be staying home?
Yeah. For now, my iPad Mini 5 with a Anker Bluetooth keyboard is my mobile device. So that's what I carry around everywhere I go. And basically because it's small. That's why I love the iPad Mini, you know, regardless of which model it is. This, you know, as our fives of listeners may recall, I'm still doing my daily doodle. So every mm-hmm. night, except for a couple of nights when I was sick over the last 3.5 years, but I think that was only twice. Every night I do a little drawing for, it used to be 15 minutes. Now it's up to half an hour. But, and I am up to, let's see, 1,183 doodles over a little over 3 years now. And so that was one of the main reasons I wanted it, is because, I've been really happy with the 2017 iPad Pro, but I really wanted to try the Apple Pencil 2. And with the new camera and, you know, the fact that my iPad Pro is now 3 years old, I thought, you know, this might be a good opportunity to upgrade, despite the craziness in the world, and maybe because of the craziness in the world, I thought, well, maybe, you know, for 30 minutes, I can be distracted from the world, and that'd be great. And hey, you know what? Apple's got to send their kids to school and feed them too. So, you know, do my little bit to keep them afloat. Not that they need my help, but I think you know what I mean. I'm thinking about getting not the $300, crazy $300 Apple keyboard, Magic Keyboard, but I may get like an under $100 Bluetooth keyboard with a trackpad and see if it works on this. I need to go do some research, make sure it works with everything. I think it does, but I'll go check various discussion boards for the iPad and iPhone and so forth, and see if anybody's talking about that. I will have to change bags if I start carrying it around. That's the only thing. But I would consider it. It's a wonderful, wonderful tablet. Very happy with it. Although, like I said, you know, the jaded reviewers who have been using a 2019 model or whatever, or 2018. I can't remember how often this has been updated, but are probably going meh, or are going meh. I've seen those reviews, and they just don't buy things the way normal people like I do.
And that's sort of the same thing I think you and I have both found over the last 10 years as we've made our transition from super early adopters to slightly later adopters.
Yep.
And that you do find those dramatic changes where all of a sudden it's, wow, that, and I have that same thing. I went from an iPad Pro 10.5 to an iPad Pro 11. You know, I only went one generation and thought, wow, that was pretty crazy of a difference. But ultimately, I have wanted the new one because of the keyboard cover and the second generation Apple Pencil. In fact, the only thing that really stops me from getting an iPad Mini to use regularly is because I would have to do that first gen Apple Pencil, and once you have the magnetic one, you really don't like the idea of it sticking out and looking kind of funny in its charging state.
I have to say that's the, you know, and I didn't really write down in my show notes anything about the Apple Pencil 2 because it's not new, right? I mean, it's been out for what, a year and a half, 2 years now, maybe. I think I got my last iPad Pro just before the Apple Pencil 2 came out for the new iPad Pro. So it was a whole new experience for me, but just for people like me who don't, you know, buy stuff every year, it's a really big difference between the Apple Pencil 1 and 2. The Apple Pencil 2 is slightly shorter because it doesn't have that cap charger thing. It's way lighter. I didn't expect that. I didn't expect the Apple Pencil 2 to be so much lighter than the 1. I mean, it is, I haven't checked the numbers, but if I had to guess, I'd say it's maybe half the weight. Maybe two-thirds the weight, something like that. It is noticeably different when you, especially when you draw with it. It feels much more like a wooden pencil than the Apple Pencil 1, which feels like, I'm not sure what I would compare it to. Like a, maybe a really heavy mechanical pencil, something like that. And the charging is, you know, I thought that was kind of clever, but and I always hated the way the Apple Pencil 1 charges in the Lightning port. But, you know, having used it now since the 2017 model, yeah, I think I bought a 2017, whenever I bought that iPad, so 3 years, I didn't expect it to be such a better experience, you know, just letting it attach to the iPad. You don't worry about somebody destroying their Lightning port socket, your Lightning socket or the connector. All those worries disappear, which is kind of nice.
Yeah.
Also notice that Apple Pencil 2 doesn't ship with a spare tip, but that's okay. I bought some spare tips, so I'm good.
The Apple Pencil 2 did scare me at one point because the tip unscrewed just enough that it was making partial contact.
Oh, yeah, I've had that happen.
So I thought for a minute it was broken and then realized, oh, no, it's not broken. It's just
loose.
It is what it is, yeah, loose.
Yeah, that happened to me with the Apple Pencil 1 just a few months ago, and I thought, oh, darn, you know, this. I thought I was going to blame the Procreate update, the drawing app I use. And then I said, oh, no, the tip's just loose. I got to just screw it back in. I did want to mention one thing about the iPad Pro 2020 that I got. I don't know what it is yet. I don't have a root cause analysis. It might be the way Procreate runs on it, but it's been spontaneously rebooting when I'm using Procreate. Yeah, I mean, like, it'll like get be frozen, and then it'll go black, and then you'll see the Apple logo, and it'll restart. So I've reached out to Procreate via Twitter. Don't have a response yet. Maybe because I sent it like Friday night and they don't monitor it over the weekend or something. But hopefully I'll get some kind of response from Twitter, from Procreate. If not, I'll send them an email and ask them, hey, is anybody else reporting this, or is it just, do I have a flaky iPad Pro? And so far, I don't think it's been rebooting spontaneously in any other app except that. So, you know, like I said, I don't have a root cause analysis yet. By the way, I will say that maybe it's because it's a new iPad, but the battery is phenomenal. And again, I'm comparing it to a 2017 iPad Pro. The iPad Pro 10.5's battery is great, but this 11's battery is just amazing. So really happy with it overall. I think it was money well spent. I'm satisfied with my purchase. I'm not having any buyer's remorse so far, except for the cover. That $79 cover, I shouldn't have bought that. I should have, you know, like spent $15 on Amazon or something. If they're still shipping it, not sure. You know, Amazon said they're giving priority to, you know, sort of life essential products, and I don't think an iPad cover is considered life essential except to me. So maybe I did the right thing by just getting a cover to protect it for now, even if it did cost more than I would have preferred to spend. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, this is actually kind of a short podcast. Oh, you have something here.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've been really interested in over the last year and a half, I've talked about a few times, has been journaling and keeping a journal and all that. And I found a really cool plugin yesterday a shortcut for Siri shortcuts on iOS, iPhone that works with the Day One app. Hmm. That is the app I use for journaling. And what it does is once you have it installed on your Siri shortcuts, you can tap it. It will ask you for the date that you want or the current date, and it will go out and download the front page of the New York Times and then create a new entry in your journal with that front page image. And it's a high-quality enough image that you can zoom in and read the first half of the stories on there and see what the headlines were. And it struck me that this would start to be a really good way to keep track of not only what was going on in my life in my journal, but also what was going on in the world in my journal. So I'm actually going to go through, since the plugin does allow you to specify a date, I'm going to go kind of slowly back through to January 1st of this year just to get everything about our current situation with coronavirus and see how the headlines changed over January, February, and up until today. But I thought that was a really cool little plug-in. Practice, it takes about 20 seconds to pull and put into your journal. And so if you are already journaling, it can be easily added to your routine and then give you more history when you're going back through in a, you know, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, and go, gee, what was going on that day when I had that really good day or that really bad day or whatever day?
Hey, John, as I recall, Day One has a free mode, but it also has kind of a premium subscription. Does this plugin or whatever this is require a premium subscription to use, or can you use it with the free
mode? It shouldn't. It should just be available to use with the free mode as well.
Okay. And I happen to have it installed in mine. I have not used Day One yet, but I do have it installed, along with some other stuff like Note Shelf, which, did I pay for that? I can't remember. So I've got a couple of things I still have yet to use. And I wish I had started it earlier now. I wish I'd started it, I guess, is what I should say. Because with all the things that's gone on this year, it would have been interesting to reflect on, I think, if we all survive for the next couple of years. I would like, speaking of surviving, I did want to mention one thing. So Apple, in collaboration with CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, and FEMA, has a COVID-19 screening tool. I don't know if it's available for the Mac, but for sure I downloaded it for my iPhone and my iPad. And it quite honestly, it doesn't do anything surprising. It sort of works the way you think it would. It asks you the questions like, you know, do you have a fever and body aches and what level? And does a pretty good job of going through that. I think most of us probably have read through all the symptoms now that you would recognize the symptom cluster if you suspect COVID-19. But this is a good job of formalizing it. It's free. It's from Apple. Like I said, it was developed with the CDC and FEMA. So, you know, it's got, I guess, some credibility if you give those organizations credibility. I know not everybody does. But there you go. Look for COVID-19 screening tool in the App Store, and you should be able to find it. And I'll put a link to the show. You can do it on the web too. You don't even need the app. You can do it right on the web. Yep. Okay, that's about it. We've managed to use up 35 minutes on not much of anything, but that's fine. That's kind of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, John. Well, you stay healthy there. Way over there, because as I said in our last podcast, we are doing our best to keep our social distance at 4,000 miles or more.
we are excelling at it in a number of great ways.
Yeah, we exceed at these, you know, these requirements. We have exceeded, met and exceeded the requirement to be socially distant. All right, folks, hopefully we'll be back soon, although it's been a little crazy. That's why we couldn't do it last week. We'll talk again later.